The Wintrust Business Lunch, John Williams and Pete Zimmerman here, our producer, and Jack Ablin, a regular guest, the chief investment officer at Crescent Capital's got a few minutes to talk about inflation with us today. Hi, Jack.
Hey, John.
Well, is this a good number or a bad number? Slightly higher than they thought, but it's still closer to 2% than 3%.
Yeah, so glass half full says, okay, we're in a downward trend. And glass half empty says, yes, but it's not trending as low as economists had expected. So, yes, the 2.4 year over year is down from 2.5, but economists were expecting 2.3. So I'll leave that for you to decide if that's good news or bad news.
You know, one of our guests, though, said this week that this sort of macroeconomic talk may matter to policymakers, but the difference between 2.2, 2.3, and 2.4 is nothing to a consumer. Do you see it that way as well?
No, I disagree. I mean, I think, you know, the consumer, like it or not, is pretty leveraged to the Fed. The Fed sets interest rates. Interest rates sets borrowing costs. And everything kind of cascades from there. And so I would say most consumers are rooting for lower rates and an aggressive Fed. And a CPI like this one, and this coupled with a very strong jobs report from last week, could potentially hold the Federal Reserve at bay. So one of the things I look at is, you know, what traders are anticipating in terms of future rate cuts. That trajectory is really flattened quite a bit from where it was even a month ago.
So what do you think they're going to do in November?
There is now, you know, it was funny. About 2 weeks ago, there was, a 60% chance of another half point cut. Now that half point cut chance is down to, I'm going to say, around 3%. And I think there's a 3% or a little bit more now chance that they do nothing. So my sense is they'll probably cut a quarter, but there is now a chance that they could stand pat.
Well, pick your poison. That is, jobs are strong, markets are good. Would you make that trade?
Yeah, I mean, I would say all in all, you would. Where I would position, you know, it's funny. One of the catalysts of this transition trade, moving away from the mega cap, you know, Mag 7 names and into everything else, was the Fed lowering rates, making borrowing costs easier for those other parts of the market that have, you know, higher debt to EBITDA, to the cash flow that they generate. You know, if you consider, for example, large cap stocks generally have about four times the amount of debt on their books as cash flow, annual cash flow. If you go out to emerging markets, that's closer to six. The Mag 7 makes so much cash in a given year, they could pay off their entire debt load. And so one of the reasons why we started to see that rotation was because we thought financing costs were going to come down. That would certainly benefit those higher levered parts of the market. Well, this is now perhaps, you know, slows that down a little bit and perhaps advantage mega cap stocks again.
Any other numbers or trends you think we should be aware of, Jack?
Well, we did have this morning also initial claims for unemployment. That spiked pretty high. What we're thinking is that really probably related to Hurricane Helene, with a lot of, firms not able to work because of power outages and things like that. So I think that was something that was kind of went against the grain and probably a one-off, although we may see a similar one for Milton.
Yeah, no kidding. The hits just keep on coming. Jack Ablin is a chief investment officer at Crescent Capital. Click on crescentcapital.com. Jack, real interesting. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks, John.
Here's an inevitable angle on the hurricane or hurricanes, Helene and now Milton, scammers. Let's get a little update from Bree Fowler, senior writer at CNET.com. What's going on, Bree?
Hi. Well, this happens with every big natural disaster. scammers start coming out of the woodwork and taking advantage of people who are hurting or people who want to help.
So is it asking for donations to fraudulent sites?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things. You see a lot of scam charities pop up, but also, you know, websites that mimic legitimate charities, emails, scam emails that go out, text messages, phone calls, even people that knock on your door asking for money to help those that have been harmed by the storms. And definitely don't give it to them.
It's funny because the wave of information we've hearing of late about coverage of it or reaction to it has been disinformation from people who have a political agenda, lying about FEMA, lying about immigrants, lying
right.
about Democrats controlling the weather, all that stupid stuff. but this is just another layer, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, this is kind of the same old, same old. I mean, that was definitely something new with the lying and the disinformation. People always try to make a buck off of tragedy. And it's really sad and depressing that I've written the story several times. And, you know, it's just like anything with phishing, with, you know, trying to get you to click on a link in an email or in a text message. It's got to be newsy. It's got to be urgent. You know, it's got to make you want to read it. And tragedy and disasters are great for that.
It's almost to the point now, and this is the real tragedy, if you will, is that if somebody did have information about the weather or the hurricane, now I'm disinclined to believe it. If somebody really was a legitimate charity, I'm disinclined to believe it. Sometimes it's hard to know who's who, and you say, skip it, I won't believe or donate anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are things that you can do as a smart consumer to make sure that your money is going to the right place and that you're getting the information you need from trusted sources. You know, if you're someone who's dealing with the storm and cleanup, things like that, talk to your local officials, you know, go straight to FEMA and, you know, they will help. And, you know, obviously you're dealing with government, so maybe it's not the fastest or most efficient, but, you know, they will never ask you for money. If someone tells you that they work for FEMA and that you need to pay to get on a list for aid, stay away. It's a scam, and this happens all the time.
The federal government is suing Amazon. This is an antitrust lawsuit. What's happening here?
Well, I mean, you think about how much stuff you buy on Amazon, how that has taken the place of so many different places we used to shop. I mean, remember back in the day when Amazon was just books and we were worried about them putting chains of bookstores out of business? You know, we're just coming off of Prime Days now when people bought all kinds of different things. And the government is saying that Amazon is too big. A federal judge said that this lawsuit, which is, you know, being, being done by the FTC and 18 states plus Puerto Rico, can go forward. The lawsuit was originally filed in September of last year. We probably won't see this go to trial, if it does, until 2026.
Yeah, I guess so. Who is losing as a result of Amazon's market dominance or efficiency? Are there other people trying to do the same sort of thing? A trust implies that they have some sort of unfair advantage.
Well, I mean, it's like anything. You know, when we talk about the government's lawsuits against companies like Google, if you do so much and you do it for cheaper and faster than everyone else, that drives competition out of business. You know, I bought my groceries from Amazon this week, and, you know, maybe I would have bought that from a local grocery store or, you know, a different online retailer. It drives smaller businesses out of business, you know, and back when we worried about independent bookstores, now, you know, you look at companies like Barnes and Noble. I remember Borders back in the day, you know, they attributed their demise to Amazon. So, you know, it goes both ways. You know, we all love the convenience and low prices, but it makes it harder for other companies to survive.
And this administration's FTC chair, the FTC chair is a hawk about this sort of thing, isn't she?
Yeah, they're definitely very pro-consumer and very pro-con, you know, just having companies have to compete. And Yeah, that means more regulation, more cracking down. We've seen a lot of antitrust movement, even if it's slow in the last couple of years. Of course, if there is an administration change next year, that could always change too.
Talk to me about Tesla and robo-taxis.
Yeah, this is kind of exciting as to, you know, how it's going to turn out. It might be a disaster too. Who knows? Tesla is finally unveiling their robo-taxi, and it's going to be done tonight at a Hollywood studio. And expectations are very high for this. Tesla has really been struggling as of late because, you know, demand for electric vehicles has flattened. They've cut prices, and people still aren't biting. So, you know, the idea is that they get this going and they start selling software for full self-driving taxis, and it might jumpstart their business. But on the other hand, we're not really sure if this software actually works yet.
I wonder what would happen. Does a Tesla vehicle with self-driving technology pull up, or do I aftermarket install Tesla's software into some other cab?
I think you could go both ways, but this definitely looks like that they want to aftermarket it and sell the software to different automakers. And they have their so-called cyber cab vehicle, but it is still an unfinished product. Some analysts are saying that it may not actually have pedals or a steering wheel when they show it off tonight. And, you know, if it was really ready for prime time, they argue that they would be doing these demos on the street and not in a studio.
Is there a market for this? Do we want or need driverless taxi cabs?
I mean, I've seen them in San Francisco, and as, you know, someone who is not exposed to these on a regular basis, it's a little frightening to see a car with no driver going down a downtown street. I haven't ridden in one personally, though. But, you know, it's kind of the way things are going. It's just whether or not, you know, we can make these safe and efficient as of yet, especially when you've got all kinds of variables and all kinds of, you know, people in the road and cars being driven by actual people that aren't controlled on the same network. I mean, it seems very hard, but it also seems very much to be the wave of the future.
Yeah, maybe it's just baby steps. I was in a Tesla Uber last weekend, and for a period of time, the driver did not have his hands on the wheel.
Oh,
I don't know if he was showing off or or what, but you know, we survived. We got to where we were going.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen that on social media as well. But you know, you still have that human body behind the driver's,
right?
You know, and behind the steering wheel that they can grab it if maybe a cat runs in front of the car or something. But, I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. But that said, I hate driving, and I'm just ready to be done with that, too.
Oh, I know if I'm ready for that. And the answer is I am not. But we'll let somebody else kind of work out the bugs. Bree Fowler is a senior writer. CNET.com. Thank you, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
Look out the 18th story window here downtown. We're at 303 East Wacker on the river, and I see below still lots of folks running, walking, and jogging around with their running gear. Some of them have what look like lanyards or medals, maybe from previous races. But the big race is this weekend. And one of the people that are going to be out there at the marathon this Sunday cheering on the runners are the folks from Lifeway Kefir. Julie Smolansky is here, the CEO of Lifeway Foods. Julie, you're on WGN Radio again. How are you?
Good, John. Thanks so much for having me.
So are you going to, what are you guys doing at the marathon this year?
Yeah. So I've actually run that marathon several times. It was one of my first marathons I've ever run, and those runners are in for quite a treat.
Yeah.
We're going to be out at the expo. We're going to be all along the course sampling our delicious and nutritious high protein probiotic kefir for all those incredible runners. What an inspiration.
Yeah, there are some just amazing stories out there. Our Bob Surratt talked this morning about a guy who is here from Ukraine. He lost a leg in the war. He has a prosthetic, and he's running all the marathons. And he's got a story to tell. And I think everybody out there is a great story to tell, don't you?
Absolutely. Well, and it's funny that you say that he's from Ukraine. I mean, wow, those people have been under siege, and it is truly an inspiration. You know, Lifeway, actually, my father and my family were refugees from the former Soviet Union, and I was actually born in Ukraine, in Kiev. And Lifeway, the product, kefir, it originates from the Soviet Union. So, you know, it's going to be nice to be able to hand that very inspirational runner a product from his homeland that does offer so much nutrition and health and wellness and healing properties. Mm. So, yeah, we're proud of that for sure.
My goodness. Okay, so I wanted to talk a little bit about your business. We have visited with you folks before, and you said that the product may have originated over there, but aren't you all Illinois-based?
Oh, yes, yes. So, yeah, in 1986, my dad founded Lifeway with this idea of bringing this staple product from the Soviet Union, from the land where my ancestors were from. It's a 2,000-year-old staple product that was totally unknown until we immigrated and settled in Chicago. And my dad brought this. He saw a gap in the marketplace. He said, America has everything, but it doesn't have kefir. And so in our basement in Skokie, Illinois, I was able to taste the very, very first batch of kefir he ever made. I remember it vividly. I was a 10-year-old kid. And so he started the company when I was 11. He took it public when I was 13 in 1988, became the first Soviet immigrant to take a company public. And, our roots are very much in Chicago, but we have grown and gone leaps and bounds since the founding days. And we're now in every city across the country, every grocery store, and we're even international now. We're in Mexico. We just started shipping to South Africa. We're in parts of the Middle East, Southeast Asia. So we've really taken our Chicago jewel of a company and really shined a light on it globally.
I want to talk about how you did that, but just give me the elevator speech. What is kefir? How do people consume it?
Yeah, so kefir is like a fermented probiotic, high protein, one of the most high quality protein sources. We now call it bioavailable nutrients. One of the highest probiotic count of a food product you can get. It's kind of similar to a yogurt drink or a smoothie. It's got an effervescent like taste to it. But we're really learning a lot about the impact of friendly live bacteria on the microbiome. And it's really kind of the centerpiece to all of our health, whether that's your immune system, digestion. We now know skin health even. You want glowing, beautiful skin that starts from within, from the gut. For mind gut, there's a mind gut axis. We know that the gut controls much of your mood. It can help manipulate stress, depression, and anxiety, and reduce those issues. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a really all around great nutritional bang for the buck that's available at every grocery store now. So
ten new flavors. Ten new flavors.
Yes. Just 2 days ago, we announced 10 exciting, brand new, trendy hot flavors. Things like pink dragon fruit. We were really inspired by the Starbucks cult hit of the pink dragon drink. Passion fruit, lychee. Who doesn't love lychee these days? Hot honey, which is all the rage. Pistachio, rose, vanilla. I'm sure you've heard of Dubai chocolate bars. Those are pistachios, a key ingredient there. Taro ube, which is a popular Asian flavor. So we've got something for everyone. We're really excited to launch those.
So how did you grow the company? Because it would seem to me like there'd be a learning curve in every market. Give me some numbers and tell me about the growth of the company.
Sure. So, yeah, like I said, my dad started it 38 years ago. He grew it consistently, kind of steady, you know, to the Eastern European market, the immigrants that were coming to the States and settling. But then the health food market at the time also blew up. Whole Foods was launching all over, other natural food co-ops. And so these early influencers, health conscious enthusiasts were, you know, really falling in love with the product, learning about Lifeway and, you know, the benefits of kefir. And that's how the original growth started happening. And I came to work for my dad right after graduating college. I went to UIC in Chicago and came to work for him and absolutely became fascinated learning about the science and the health benefits of the product, which I, you know, even though I knew a lot about it, really digging into the health benefits was something I thought everyone should know about. And so I helped him, you know, launch the first marketing campaigns that we ever did. And unfortunately, in 2002, he had a sudden heart attack, and I took over at the age of 27. And, you know, that was really challenging, but we really brought on kind of what we today call influencers, but we were doing that kind of early on with nutritionists and people who really were leaders in the food space and leaders with their friends and communities, and taught them about kefir and the benefits and, you know, probiotics. And, you know, it was a lot of sampling, like things that we're doing this week and have always done. We're going to be at all the turkey trots around town and various festivals. But, you know, it's trial, making sure that people were able to taste the product in their hands. And just this week, for example, Bethany Frankel, the superstar Bethany Frankel, posted an entire TikTok reviewing our Lifeway Farmer's Cheese, which is like a cottage cheese, like a blend of cottage cheese. So it's kind of like doing that, but we've been doing it for, you know, 38 years, building that market, creating a category. Like, my dad really brought an entire category to the United States, and we've really been scaling that. And so just in the last 19 quarters, we've had 19 quarters of year-over-year top-line growth. We've just hit our fifth consecutive record-breaking quarter, hitting almost $50 million for that quarter. So that's really exciting. You know, we're trending on $200 million annually, up from $93 million just 5 years ago. That's a 71% increase. Like, I'm just so proud of the team and all of our customers. And while I don't like to focus or obsess about our stock price, I will say, and I'm really proud of it, our stock price has gone from $1.99 in 2019 to I think it hit $26.49 yesterday, which is a 1,200% increase. So that's really, I'm just really proud of those kinds of those numbers. And I really credit with Chicago being the home base. The community of Chicago has really supported us, uplifted us. We work with so many wonderful organizations and agencies and firms that all are part of the team in one way or another. So
what a great story.
Thank you.
What a great story.
Yeah.
Julie Smolansky is the CEO of Lifeway Foods. Find out more at Lifeway Kefir. That's, of course, spelled K-E-F-I-R. LifewayKefir.com. Julie, a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much, John.
Let's keep you going on the business front now. We've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deerfield-based Baxter International says Hurricane Helene could cause a shortage of IV fluids that could last for months. The company says its largest manufacturing plant in North Carolina was hard hit last month by the storm. It could take until the end of the year to bring some operations back to 100%. Baxter has been capping some orders for IV fluid. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has authorized IV imports from other Baxter plants in Canada, Ireland, China, and the U.K. The United Auto Workers Union says a strike against at least one Stellantis plant could start within weeks as part of a controversy tied to Illinois. The UAW is holding a rally in Washington, D.C. as it pressures the automaker to keep a promise made in contract negotiations last year. The union accuses Stellantis of not reopening the assembly plant in Belvidere, which the company says has been delayed. Stellantis says a strike would be illegal based on the contract language that allows it to adjust to volatile market conditions. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And the business of food is the business of sports, the big game at Memorial Stadium in Champaign-Urbana Saturday, a showdown of two Midwest powerhouses of agricultural universities.
It is. We're excited to have Purdue coming to town. It's a It always is a good rivalry.
That is Jennifer Larson.
I'm the Assistant Dean for Marketing Communications at the College of ACES at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
And I guess this is where I say I-L-L.
I-N-I.
And let's make sure everyone recognizes that without agriculture, there would be no football.
Very good point.
Well, thank you. And more good points will be made after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. It's a 2:30 kickoff at Memorial Stadium on Saturday, but for hours before that, the students at the College of ACES will be putting on Celebrate Food and Ag Day.
To give them some fun things to do while they're preparing to watch the game.
And it'll be another big tailgate event.
Yes. In fact, if you don't know, I think tailgating started at the University of Illinois.
And the tailgaters on Saturday don't have to bring meat. The university's meat sales lab is going to be selling all sorts of meat.
We have steak, we have brats, we even have eggs, bacon, and things for breakfast. And our sustainable student farm is going to be there selling produce.
And there will be all sorts of family fun with a petting zoo, a bunch of farm animals, other interactive activities demonstrating how food gets from the farm to your table. All of it is happening in Grange Grove.
It's on the west side of the stadium.
And it's a great way for the College of ACES to show off the many ways that people can work in agriculture, which is the most essential industry.
We have a lot of people that are very, very interested in not only having successful careers, but it's also they want to make a difference. You know, we're all about food security and advancing sustainable practices.
Saturday, the Illini and the Boilermakers.
Illinois is going to win.
I kind of thought she would say that. By the way, as I mentioned, football owes a lot to agriculture. The first footballs were inflated pig bladders, and the word gridiron goes back to when the fields were marked with crisscrossing lines that resembled a cooking griddle called a gridiron. On the food calendar, today's National Angel Food Cake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
It is also National Pasta Month. Go figure, they're running the marathon right now, or this weekend. Bob Broski is the Lettuce Executive Chef Partner at Lettuce Entertain You. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
So if I go to Pizzeria Portofino on the river or any of the RPM seafood, RPM Italian steak, the Oakville Grill, that's you, right?
That's me. That's exactly right.
Congratulations, man. Those are beautiful places. They're great locations. I think RPM Italia's got the best view from a restaurant in the city. And somebody dropped off some of the pasta that you all serve here. I am very popular right now.
We wanted to make sure you got to try some of the classics.
Well, you got a bunch of then marathon specials for folks that are in town, right?
Absolutely. At Pizzeria Portofino, we're going to do, you know, we want to make sure everybody's carbo-loaded, so we're going to do double portions of pasta the day before the race. And then at all the RPMs, as well as Portofino, after the race, bring your medal, and would love to give you a free Giuliana Prosecco toast.
Yeah, there's...
At the Oakville.
Yeah, keep going.
We want to do, you know, something similar. We want to get everybody carbo-loaded, so if you show us your proof of registration, we're going to give you free artichoke dip or our crispy Parmesan fries as well.
At Mon Ami Gabi in Lincoln Park, I can read from this, present your marathon bib or medal when dining in at the bistro and get a 26.2% discount on your meal. That sounds pretty good.
Definitely, definitely.
What's the specialty of the house or houses? I mean, is there a particular pasta that you're especially proud of?
I mean, at RPM Italian, kind of the one that started it all for us was our Bucatini Pomodoro. That's kind of, you know, the heart and soul of that restaurant, and that's the one, you know, we love to talk about. And when it comes to Pizzeria Portofino, our number one seller by far is the rigatoni alla vodka with the burrata and the Calabrian chili. Just, you know, all crowd favorites that everybody loves.
Yeah, right. How's that Portofino restaurant doing? I remember when that opened, it was hard to get in. I presume there's, given the location, still that must still be a very hot spot.
We are very happy to say that it is difficult to get in. We are busy all the time. It's great to be right on the water, and nobody throws a party like Pizzeria Portofino.
So does pasta really make a difference for marathon runners, you think?
I mean, absolutely. You want to have that energy stored up so you can run the 26.2 miles.
Yeah, right. Although you're also doing it afterwards. I guess when they're depleted, a little pasta feels good, huh?
Exactly right. Exactly.
So how's business been for you all? What's the restaurant industry like in Chicago right now?
things are well. We're kind of hanging on to summer as long as we possibly can. So all of our stores with patios are still, you know, still rocking. And we're going to, kind of transfer over to the fall and cooler months and change the menus to more seasonal fall items here shortly. And we're excited to kind of, you know, ride with the ebb and flows of the weather here.
Where is a good place in your portfolio of restaurants to eat outside?
I mean, Pizzeria Portofino and RPM Seafood, the views cannot be beat. We're right on the water. Incredible views both daytime and at night.
RPM Seafood, you said. RPM Italia is on the water too, right?
We are not quite on the water. We're kind of down the way a little bit, but incredible happy hours at RPM Italian. And again, that's kind of the flagship RPM that started it all for us.
Yeah, no kidding. Good views at all those locations. Okay, so is this exclusive for people with the bibs or medals in the marathon?
Yes, we want to make sure we're taking care of all the people that are running the race this weekend.
Yeah, okay. So any of those RPM restaurants, you can check it out at lettuce.com for more information. Bob Broski is the executive chef at RPM Italian, RPM Steak, Seafood, the Oakville Grill, Pizzeria Portofino that we've been talking about, too. Congratulations, Bob. Well done, and thank you. The food's delicious.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.